And good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY on this brisk, windy, cool Wednesday, January 11th, 2017 morning. And you are tuned in to the KRFY morning show. And I'm Susie Prez, one of your co-hosts, and
I'm Chris Bessler, the second co-host. Getting more adjectives to add there, Susie, about the weather? Cool, cold, brisk.
I don't know, really
breezy.
Cold. Brr.
Yeah, I just walked over five blocks from my office, and it was about as much as I wanted. It was it's the breeze that does it.
Well, we'll get to the weather in a moment, but our guest.
Yes. Today we're going to be talking with Shannon Williamson, the executive director of Lake Pondere Waterkeeper. Hey, Shannon.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And we're going to be talking specifically about the stormwater monitoring program that Waterkeeper does, but other things as well.
Absolutely.
There's so much to learn. The Waterkeeper is one of our valued environmental groups, I'd call it. But really specifically, there's so much going on that we don't know about. So it will really be good to get an overview of the organization and then really get into the storm runoff program that you have, stormwater. So, but first, from the National Weather Service, it's currently 12 degrees out there, and it feels colder because it is windy. We're having winds from the north, 11 to 60 miles per hour, which gives us a wind chill of minus 13. So no wonder you were cold, Chris. Mm. And we are getting gusts up to 26, and that's for today. Our high today is 15, and then it's going down. Tonight, a low of 2 degrees, mostly clear with wind chill values of minus 11 and winds 3 to 6. So the winds have calmed down, but the temperature drops. And on Thursday, mostly sunny with high near 13 and calm winds. That's kind of a beautiful day, we would call that. And Thursday night, mostly sunny with patchy freezing fog after 10 p.m. and partly cloudy with lows around 4. Calm winds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just kind of hovering there around typical winter weather.
Mm-hmm.
So no snow.
Take 4 degrees versus 12 if you cut the wind out.
Okay.
Because it's the wind that really
cuts through, yeah.
Yeah, it gets things cold. And things going on around town. We're coming up on a holiday weekend, Martin Luther King.
Yeah, right. Weekend. Well, we have a big event for KRFY and Team Autism at the Panada, and we are completely sold out. So for all those folks that bought tickets, thank you. And
the event is?
It's Viggo Mortensen in person. It's an evening with Viggo Mortensen and the showing of Captain Fantastic, his latest movie, which he did get a Grammy nomination.
Golden
Globe nomination for Best Actor in a Drama for Captain Fantastic. And he will do a question and answer. He'll introduce the movie. But this is a benefit for KRFY and Team Autism 24/7.
Yeah. And we are unfortunately out of tickets for that. But thanks to all that did buy tickets. And if you got a ticket that you aren't going to be able to use, it'd be great if you would call us up, and because we have a waiting list of folks who would really love to go and weren't able to get tickets. And our number is, Susie?
265-2992.
So if you have an extra ticket and you'd like to put it back in the pool, that'd be great. Other things going on around town is Martin Luther King weekend coming up. And Schweitzer puts on a bunch of events up there, including a Northern Lights show with a torchlight parade. That's on Saturday. And then there's an extra night of night skiing on Sunday. And here's something neat that's happening tomorrow night. Western Pleasure Guest Ranch is having a full moon ski out at their cross-country ski trails. And you just would go anytime after dark. It's good. I don't know if you guys caught the moon last night, but it was really pretty gorgeous out. It really lights up with all the white snow on the ground. If you're interested in doing that, you just go out there around 5:30. I think this moon rise will be around 5:30. And they'll be skiing till around 8 p.m. That's at Western Pleasure Guest Ranch. And there's other things going on. We'll probably circle back to the community calendar towards the end of the show. But for now, let's get on to today's topic with Shannon Williamson, Executive Director of the Lake Pondere Waterkeeper. Shannon, thank you for being here.
Thanks again for having me. Always a pleasure.
I know a lot of our listeners are acquainted with the organization, but for those that may not be, give us the brief overview of what Waterkeeper is about.
Sure. So Lake Pondere Waterkeeper was founded in 2009, and I came on board in 2011. And our mission is really straightforward. It's to protect the water quality of the waterways, including Lake Pondere, the Pondere River, and other tributaries within the Clark Fork Pondere watershed, so that they remain swimmable, fishable, and drinkable, not just now, but for future generations as well. And the organization was initially founded around a single issue, which was the heavy use of aquatic pesticides to manage invasive Eurasian water milfoil. Excuse me. But since that time, the issues that we work on and the programming that we bring to the community has really diversified. And so we continue to work on the pesticide issue. But since then, we've started to work on wastewater pollution, stormwater pollution, which I'm going to be talking a little bit more about, fossil fuel by rail issues, which include the transport of coal and volatile crude oil through the watershed. And we also bring a couple of educational programs to our area students, which includes an interactive lake model that we bring into the classrooms within the district for grades 3 through 6, which is a lot of fun. And the kids just really seem to light up, and lots of light bulbs go off in their head about how they can protect our waterways. And then we also, this summer, we'll be going into year 4 of our Watershed Discovery Camp, which is a science-based camp that is also super fun, that's also geared towards that age group of students.
On those educational programs, how do you connect to the kids? Do you work with schools?
Right. So for the interactive lake model, we contact teachers directly. We have a long list of teachers we've worked with in the past, but we always like to make it available to new teachers as well. And they just basically work with me to sign up for a time, and we can do this all year round. And I encourage teachers, if they're interested, to sign up throughout the year rather than just in the spring, because it gets harder to bring the lake model to all the classrooms in a short period of time. But yeah, they just get into contact with me. We schedule a time. It takes about an hour and a half to go through the presentation. We also have it's very hands-on all throughout the activity, but we follow it up with actually a test, an experiment that the students do to determine the amount of oxygen in lake water. Then we talk about the importance of oxygen and what it means for healthy waterways. So anytime of year, I'm happy to come out. They just need to get in touch with me, and they can do that through my email address, which is shannon@lpow.org, or they can give us a call at 208-597-7188.
Or hit you via your website as well.
Right. There's a contact us button on our website that'll come to me directly. So you can that's www.lpow.org as well.
Or Lake Pondere Waterkeeper.org.
Yes, either one.
You type the whole word in.
Mm-hmm. And considering we live in such a water area with the Clark Fork drainage coming all the way through everywhere we live, we're so fortunate. And this particular watershed, as you call it, is still relatively, you know, it's worth protecting, because it's not a matter of mitigation, but more of protecting.
Absolutely. We're in a really unique situation here in North Idaho. So some of you may be familiar with the Waterkeeper model, but for those that aren't, we are a member organization of a larger umbrella organization called the Waterkeeper Alliance. And it's a global organization. There's over now 300 waterkeepers worldwide protecting different waterways. And what's unique about Lake Pondere Waterkeeper is that we're in a position to protect and preserve rather than restore. So many other waterkeepers are working to restore horribly polluted water bodies. And, you know, the community can really see what the problem is. It's very visual. And so it makes their work not easy, but a little bit easier than I think the situation we're in up here, because it's really hard to imagine that there's numerous threats to the water quality of our Lake Pondere and our other waterways around here. But there are, and that's what I'm here to talk about.
And we actually do have areas of the lake that are more degraded.
Absolutely.
You know, I think long-term residents here can identify, they can actually recall when the water was actually cleaner. We have really clean water. So when you're swimming in it at, say, City Beach or areas that are near the more densely populated mm-hmm. parts of the lakeshore, it seems like it's really clean. But when you compare that to the water quality like you see along the Monarchs, uh-huh. where it's just startlingly clear, you realize there is a difference in water quality around the lake.
And we've been measuring that difference. We This next summer, we'll be going into our sixth year of a citizen science-based water quality monitoring program where we actually collect water quality data from 15 locations throughout the lake and river, and we definitely see a big difference in areas that are affected by human activity than those that are not. And we've been able to track changes to water quality over the last 5 years, and that information is really, really critical. And we've shared it with our state regulatory agency, and they've put it into practice to help protect those waterways.
How many folks, citizens, helped with monitoring last year?
It varies from year to year, but we have between 10 and 12. We also have some backup volunteers for when our primary volunteer can't sample for a particular month. Our sampling goes on seasonally, June through October. And we have some volunteers that sample multiple stations. And so it's a really dynamic program. We love to get new people involved. It's a really, I think, great way to connect with your station, whatever station that may be. People get out on the water once a month in their kayaks and canoes and sometimes even paddle boards. And, you know, it's just a terrible excuse to get out on a beautiful day and mm-hmm. paddle around.
Mm-hmm. But you must be, if you want to get in on this volunteer program, you better be reliable because you got to do it,
right? Right, right. We follow really strict quality assurance and quality control protocols so that regulatory agencies, including EPA as well, can use our data. We don't follow these really strict rules, which includes rules around sampling and how the samples are processed and handled, then the data they don't consider as reliable. And so our volunteers go through a pretty rigorous training. It doesn't take a lot of time, but the folks that sign up are really committed, and we encourage new involvement, and we're happy to talk to anybody that's interested.
Mm-hmm. How much time is involved in this donation of time, this volunteer program?
I'd say for the training component, it's usually in April we have an informational meeting, which is about an hour. That's when anybody new that's interested wants to come and learn more. They come to our office. You know, we have cookies and tea and talk about it. And then about a month later, those that are interested in getting trained go through a training. We usually have a couple different options. That's, again, about an hour. It's not a really time-intensive activity. And then we start collecting water samples monthly from June to October. So depends on which watercraft you're using and where you're putting in or your proximity to your station. Most people are pretty close to their station. You know, it can take anywhere from a half an hour to, you know, 2 hours. Depends on how fast you paddle and how much you want to just, you know, enjoy the day.
Is it, you have to be there on a specific day, though?
We sample the third Tuesday of the month for a reason, is to take advantage of a shuttle that we send our laboratory samples on that leaves from the Panhandle Health District building down to the lab in Coeur d'Alene. It saves us a trip, and that leaves on Wednesday mornings. And so it's been, you know, we've done this the last several years where we've collected on the third Tuesday of the month.
So you could hit inclement weather sometimes.
It happens, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if that's the case, you know, we always want everyone to be safe. That's, you know, our priority. And so if the weather's looking dicey, we just postpone it to the following Tuesday. If weather allows, we just try to stick to Tuesdays.
It sounds like an opportunity. You know, so many times people say, I just want to help. I want to do something. And this is definitely contributing to the protection of our beautiful water here.
Oh, directly. Yeah. I mean, there has been a direct response in the collection of the information that our volunteers have helped put together and action that's been taken to protect certain areas of the lake. So it's been a really rewarding program.
And so another program you have going that we want to talk about today is the stormwater monitoring program.
Right. This is another monitoring program that is also citizen science based. It's a baby program right now. We did a pilot study last year where we were able to collect water quality information from stormwater rather than lake water. And so the difference is basically, in the springtime primarily, stormwater happens all year round, but there's a big impact in the spring when we start to have melting snow and rain on snow events. And so all of the, you know, debris and chemicals and all kinds, anything you can imagine that's falling onto kind of hard surfaces like our roadways, your driveway, your rooftops, that's collecting when there's, you know, a big flush of water over that, all of those chemicals and other types of compounds get swept up into that water and go into the storm drains we see around town. And none of that gets treated. And so we call it, you know, polluted runoff. It goes surprisingly, directly into the lake or river. And if you're curious about this network of underground stormwater pipes and where they discharge to, the city of Sandpoint has a pretty cool GIS website where you can click on what they call different layers, and there's some stormwater layers. And the first time I did that, it was a big eye-opener to me. I knew I wanted to create a monitoring program because nobody's monitoring the composition of stormwater. And we know it's one of the biggest pollutants to U.S. waterways, you know, across the board, probably across the globe, actually. Because we don't know what's in it here. We have no idea because our communities are too small to be under any type of regulation right now. So they're not required to do any monitoring. And we know that there's a problem with stormwater. So that's what inspired me to create the program. But when I was trying to figure out where are we going to sample, and I looked at this GIS map, it was pretty astonishing how many discharge locations there are to Sand Creek, which is where we sample right now, as well as all over the river and other areas of the lake.
Okay. Follow-up question on that. But first, I want to remind our listeners, this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie, and we're speaking today with Shannon Williamson. She's the Executive Director of Lake Pendray Waterkeeper. And we're talking about the stormwater monitoring program that's a new program
yes.
for the Waterkeeper. And you're describing the network of a drainage that exists to take the water out to the lake from this city of Sandpoint. So where do you monitor this for the runoff?
Right. So last year we were only able to raise enough funds to sample two locations. And one is actually located in Pendray, and one's located in the city of Sandpoint. And they both drain to Sand Creek. And we picked these particular locations for important reasons. The one that's within Sandpoint, we call it the Chestnut Drainage. It drains into Sand Creek right behind the Chamber of Commerce. It drains one of the most polluted locations in Sandpoint, which is the former wood pole trading plant called the Joslin property over by Super One along Boyer there. And so that's been under monitoring, groundwater monitoring by our state for a while now for some pretty nasty chemicals. And the state told us, well, we did some, you know, computer modeling, and it doesn't look like any of these chemicals are getting into the surface water. And so they didn't actually do any real monitoring. They just did computer modeling. And so I didn't really believe that. And so we decided to sample the stormwater that drains this location. And it doesn't just drain this location. It drains many, many streets surrounding this location. And so we thought if we detected a signal, that's an important result that we need to share, because it's not just coming from the stormwater is being drained all around that area. So that was the one area. The one in Pendray we call the Walmart drainage, because it drains all the big box stores and drains directly into Sand Creek right by the bridge that separates Pendray from Sandpoint. And we thought we'd see probably some signals of pollution there as well, and we certainly did. And so we sampled last year for 3 months from March to May. And some of the main findings we found, well, first from Walmart, the most kind of astonishing thing we found was a huge signal of E. coli pollution, which is an indicator of fecal pollution. And the level that we detected was 10 times the state's limit, which was alarming, to say the least. We also found a zinc signal, which is, you know, pretty common for, you know, an industrial area with galvanized roofs. And so zinc can be pretty harmful to our fish populations. So that was good to know. We also saw, you know, really, you know, elevated levels of nutrients, which nutrient pollution is extremely common. We kind of expected that, as well as some pesticide signals.
So when you shared these results that you received, the big box store, we'll call it, or Walnut Creek, is that what
Walnut you're Drainage, yeah. Uh-huh.
With the E. coli and the one from the woods processing mill that was over by Super One, what was the state's response?
Well, for the location in Sandpoint, which is, I hadn't mentioned the results from that one yet, but the big signal we saw there was a chemical called pentachlorophenol. It's a mouthful. And it's a really, really nasty chemical that is associated with, has carcinogenic effects and renal and neurological effects.
So used in wood treatment?
It's used in wood treatment, right.
So it's coming possibly from the pole yard there.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And so this was an important finding because they weren't monitoring surface water, stormwater, just groundwater. And so in that case, I did speak with the project manager at the state, and he was extremely surprised to hear that this that we found this chemical 3 months in a row. And this is where it brings us to this year, because I also shared the E. coli information with our state, and you know, it sets up alarm bells, but they want more information. They want more data. And so, you know, at the time we were pretty limited in our funding, and it's a short season of sampling because the lake level starts to come up. At least for the Sandpoint site, we need to have the Sand Creek bed down to be able to access the location. Similarly, for Walmart, we need the water level or the volume of stormwater coming out of the discharge area to be pretty high. And so there's a limited, you know, time for sampling. And so that's why it's really important that we have the ability to follow up on those two sites this year to see if we see any significant trends. And really, 2 years worth of data is not that much either. And so this is the type of program that we really feel, you know, needs some long-term support so that we can, you know, get a much clearer idea of what's in our stormwater and then be able to work with agencies to address some of these significant issues. It's also going to be a really valuable resource, I think, for the cities of Sandpoint and Ponderay, because they're getting close to the point where their combined population size is going to trigger regulation for stormwater. And so by having this information ahead of time, it puts them in a much better proactive position to mitigate these pollutants instead of just all of a sudden having to start monitoring on their own and being years behind.
Mm-hmm. For the Ponderay site, where you're getting, you said levels that are 10 times the accepted level for fecal matter.
Right.
That sounds like to be a signal that there's a failure of septic tanks or something.
Right. I mean, this is something that definitely needs to be looked into. I mean, thrown around a couple ideas of where that could have come from. You know, lots of RVs park at Walmart, especially, you know, going into spring and summer, not necessarily more of the winter, but, you know, improperly disposing of, you know, their toilet systems could have happened. You know, it's possible it could have been animal associated. We can't tell that with our tests, but the levels are probably, you know, way too high to.
And was that consistent all 3 months?
It wasn't consistent all 3 months. Okay. It really spiked in April. April was the month that.
April was a later month in the sampling.
Here we started in March.
Okay. So maybe there were more RVs coming through and using the Walmart parking lot.
And not disposing of their waste properly.
Or something could have been accidental too, right?
It could have been accidental, right?
And did you share this information with Ponderay? Because they may have a breach or a leak in their infrastructure system.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yes. And we've worked closely with Eric Brubaker, who's their planner. He was really, really helpful in helping me find locations that would be important to sample. And again, it could have been a one-off event. We did see things that were more consistent, like the higher levels of zinc and nutrient pollution. But that's why it's important to go back and monitor again. If this is something that we see year after year, or all of a sudden we're seeing it all 3 months, you know, this is something that we need to at least partner with, you know, the local municipality as well as the state to figure out how to address it.
So how many points of discharge are there into either Sand Creek or the lake from the stormwater system?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I just know that they're numerous.
There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I know for the city of Sandpoint, I mean, just along the river alone, there was, you know, just at a glance, you know, probably to the city limit, you know, 20 or so. In Ponderay, there isn't such a map. That's why I was working with their planner, because, you know, he's personally mapped it out. And so these are just two small areas, you know, that impact our watershed. And so stormwater is probably going to be less of an issue on unpopulated areas, you know, of our lake, of course. But when you get down to the southern end in Bayview, you know, you're going to have those issues again. But we've been limited in what we've been able to monitor. We would you know, love to be able to expand the program past two locations. We know this is an issue that needs to be worked on.
Well, one of the things that's always interesting about nonprofits, which Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper is a nonprofit,
right,
is finding funding. And we didn't really talk about how is this important organization funded. But what you're saying is the storm water runoff needs to be monitored in a consistent way year after year in order to have the clout to say we need to do something. We've shown the statistically that this is an issue and we don't want to pollute the lake. So where are you at with, you said you need to find the funding.
Right. So this program costs $5,000 per station, and that covers laboratory fees for a 3-month period of time. And so at a minimum, we need to raise $10,000 to do the same type of monitoring or level of monitoring that we did last year. But, you know, it would be amazing if we were able to raise more than that, because we have originally my list was 4 locations, which is pretty modest. And we were only able to raise the funds for 2. And so we already have 2 on deck, although there's other ones. The more I look at the map, the more I want to sample. But it would be really great if, you know, if this is important concept to somebody, if they wanted to even adopt a station, I'd love to talk to them about that, because that's going to make a huge difference in what we know. And the reason, you know, the kind of instigation around this whole program was, you know, we hear about stormwater and read about stormwater, and everyone knows that, you know, it contains icky stuff, but nobody was doing anything about it. Nobody, you know, wanted to figure out what was in it. Our state doesn't have the funding. This is not a service that's provided by our cities or our county. And Waterkeeper provides a lot of these services that are not provided by other entities. And so we're not satisfied with just going, oh, well, we know that's bad, but whatever. So we need to have the information.
Do you also need volunteers for the monitoring itself?
Yes. And so I did mention it's a citizen science-based program. It's a lot less intense than our seasonal water quality monitoring, because there's no need to, I guess I shouldn't say that, depends on the location. So there's a little bit of hiking involved, I guess, to get to the one location behind the chamber. But we try to make the spots as accessible as possible. But there's no, you know, going out on a vessel. It's really taking a series of laboratory bottles with you and performing a couple field measurements like temperature and pH and doing a dissolved oxygen test. But it's really straightforward. The training's straightforward. And it's not a huge time commitment. And so if you're someone that kind of likes to, you know, hike around the woods and doesn't mind carrying some bottles with you in a backpack, then I think this might be a good program to get involved in.
Mm-hmm. So really there's 2 things that's needed here: is volunteers to help with the monitoring and also the funds to make this happen. You mentioned adopting a testing site, mm-hmm. monitoring site. I think that's kind of a neat idea. A whole group of people could get together and
absolutely
join their financial abilities together and adopt one of the sites. Because when I think about it, after a few years, if you've seen consistent pollution from the storm water runoff, what would the city or the Ponderay or the county do to protect our lake quality, our lake water?
Well, they're going to be forced into the situation in the next couple of years. It's hard to put a direct timeline on it. It really is dependent on the state. Where they're going to have to put best management practices into place, and these need to be informed by what they're trying to mitigate for. So if you're just kind of like shooting in the dark, you don't really know what's in your stormwater, it's not the best use of your time or your taxpayer dollars to create mitigation or best management practices that may or may not work. And so by having this information in their back pocket or a couple years worth of it, I think is really valuable. And so they'll be able to, you know, look to what other cities have done and you know, learn
filters
some lessons.
Or something.
Exactly. There's a lot of different options, low mm-hmm. impact development, you know, vegetated buffers, things that the city's doing already, at least Sandpoint, some of those green swales. I mean, that's all helpful, but there's also a lot of more sophisticated options like filtration systems at discharge locations that, it's going to help inform them.
Of course, we see the visible swales in town, mm-hmm. and those are designed. I know that some citizens probably don't understand that those are designed to actually trap stormwater runoff.
Yes.
And filter down through the soil. But you mentioned other treatment programs. So if there's a whole bunch of points of discharge to the lake, would the methodology be to get filters at each of those points?
I'd say it really depends on what the pollutants are coming out of each discharge location. If it's something that can be addressed with less sophisticated technology, I know we have some other vegetative swales down by Memorial Field, then, you know, I think you have to look at what is cost effective, because some of these filtration systems, although they're amazing in what they can do, are expensive. And so, but if you have a pretty, you know, significant pollutant like this pentachlorophenol, that's a really nasty chemical that, you know, may impact somebody's health, then I think then you prioritize where you put this technology.
And that would be more of a kind of a brownfield resolution sort of thing, where they actually take care of the pollution at the
in the theory. Place where it's, yeah. Well, what the company's been required to do is, all they did was put an asphalt cap on it. They had the opportunity to dig it up and incinerate it, which would have been the right thing to do, but they chose to go the less expensive route. And so our state is now forced into a situation where they are monitoring groundwater. And if that groundwater has, you know, high levels of the chemicals of concern, then they're in a position to have this company do, you know, additional mitigation. But these processes take such a long time. You know, they need to collect 4 years worth of violations before they're in a position to make any changes. And so by, you know, private groups such as us collecting information, we speed up that process a lot.
We're in the studios of 88.5 KRFY, and thanks for tuning in to our station here. We're talking with Shannon Williamson. She's the executive director of the Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper. We're talking about a lot of things about the organization, but specifically stormwater runoff and monitoring. We'd like to take a little musical break and come back. I have a whole bunch more questions. I'm sure Chris mm-hmm. does too. And we want you to stay with us. But right now we're going to listen to Neil Young. And this song is called Who's Going to Stand Up? We'll be right back. Thank you. And that was Neil Young, Who's Going to Stand Up? And we're here live in the studios of KRFY for the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie and our guest, Shannon Williamson from the Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper Executive Director. And we're talking about storm water runoff and the importance of monitoring that. That's something, a program that's coming up right away for you, and the need to have funding to make that program and the reason for it, how important it is to save our beautiful lake and to keep it clean. And some of these chemicals you mentioned really brought to mind, who are you and what is your background, Shannon, because you have a very keen handle on all of the scientific parts of your organization's mission.
Right. We are a very science-based organization, and I'm a scientist. Mm-hmm. I have a PhD in marine science. And before I came up to the Lake Ponderay region, I did conduct research in the marine environment studying microbiology. So I was an expert on marine viruses, which not many people think about, and how they influence nutrient cycling in our oceans and how they influence adaptation and evolution in bacteria. Sounds really strange. But
where were you working?
I was working at a research institute called the J. Craig Venter Institute in San Diego. And some of you might be familiar with that individual. He led the private effort to sequence the human genome. And so we used a lot of genomic science in our work. And I was also an adjunct professor at the University of California, San Diego at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. So it was a bit of a change for me to go from Southern California to North Idaho, but it's been the best decision ever for me. And I love Lake Ponderay. And a lot of what I learned in graduate school and even undergraduate school and everything since then, when I went into my research career, has really helped, I think, what we do at Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper, especially all the monitoring. I'm a curious person, and when there's questions that, you know, could be answered that are left unanswered, we'd like to figure out a way to address that. And so monitoring is a huge way to do that.
Mm-hmm. You're like an investigative scientist.
Right.
Exactly. So we want to get back to the stormwater, because this organization, it takes funding to, all it is the water sampling costs. The sampling costs, because you get volunteers to do the sampling.
Right, right.
For the most part. So this sounds like you were very important monitoring process that you want to continue from last year, from what you found, and the importance of the information having clout in any kind of mitigation
right.
needs to be done over a period of time. So how do people get involved? How can they help with the funding? What do you need?
So I mentioned earlier, a location to sample for 3 months is $5,000. And the majority of that does go to laboratory testing. We do, you know, pretty extensive testing for different types of chemicals and different types of pathogens and things like that. There are some other costs associated with some of the materials and supplies we need to supply or to give to our volunteers, as well as some of the data analysis efforts. But again, it's really the laboratory costs that drive the price of the program. And so if anyone's interested in contributing, which would be amazing, they can get in touch with me directly through my email address, which is shannon@lpow.org. Or you can actually go onto our website, which is www.lpow.org. And under Get Involved, you'll see a button for donate, and you can actually select stormwater monitoring specifically and know that your donation is going towards that program.
It seems that everyone who lives in this area values our beautiful water and our waterways, be it rivers, streams, and especially the big lake. And so this is an organization that is directly protecting lake,
right.
the lake. Mm-hmm.
That's what we do all day, every day.
But, you know, you mentioned some of the educational programs you have with kids in the schools. And I'm wondering what your experience working with those kids is, because the lake is probably our biggest natural feature here. I mean, we have the mountains are a big natural feature, but the lake is really the distinctive natural feature, I think, about this area. But that being the case, I still know that some people are really connected to the lake and some people are not connected at all to the lake. And I wonder if you find with working with kids that there's a percentage of kids that, oh, yeah, I swim there a lot and I fish and I go out on boats. And there are other kids that don't do anything with the lake.
Right. It's an interesting question, because that's one of the first things I ask the students, is they say, you know, raise your hand if you like to swim, and, you know, all the hands shoot up, and raise your hands if you like to fish, and, you know, many of the hands shoot up. And so I'm trying to gauge, you know, how these kids interact with the streams and rivers and lakes around our area. And, you know, usually after those questions, many of the students just volunteer stories about how they fish with their grandparents, their mom and their dad, and they go camping. And, you know, it seems to me that, you know, almost every class I've worked with has been extremely connected to our waterways. And so that's been really encouraging and inspiring, because really we go into the classrooms because we want to, you know, help educate and bring up that next generation of environmental stewards. And just knowing from the get-go that they're invested is really satisfying. But, you know, as we go through the activity with the lake model, and we build the lake, what I call, from the tiniest organisms to the largest, you know, even though I ask them what lives in the lake, you know, sometimes they say the lake monster, but most times they say, you know, they think of fish. And so then we kind of reverse engineer, you know, really how the whole system works. Like, what are the tiniest components and how are they related to the biggest components, and what keeps that whole system healthy?
Mm-hmm. Like, what do the fish eat?
Right.
And then what do the animals that the fish eat?
Right.
But I start the
other way around. Okay. You know, we start with plankton. I skip bacteria, although technically virus is the most numerous thing, but we don't go there. It's a little too tiny. We start with phytoplankton, and then we talked about, you know, zooplankton, and then we talk about little fish and other things that eat zooplankton. And they actually build the lake. You know, I bring these, you know, mock components in, and they add it to the lake model, and then we add plants and bottom dwellers, or, you know, imaginary bottom dwellers. Sometimes I have little snail shells and things like that. We talk about what lives in the sediments, the importance of the different types of plants, what their functions are. And then we bring our resident goldfish into the schools, although I don't know what happened to them over the summer, but they are enormous now. We've had them for 4 years, and they've lived through traveling all over Bonner County and going to schools in Tupperware containers. And they're too big. I'm going to have to retire them and get some new ones. They'll just remain as pets. But the kids that get to add the fish to the model are just ecstatic. And then, we talk about, does this look like a healthy lake? We've put all the components that are needed in here for this system to function. They say, oh, yeah. Would you like to swim in it? Yeah. And then we add pollution, which is just a little bit of dyed salt water. So they can see that, salt water and some types of pollutants are heavier than water, and it sinks, and they can see that because it's blue, and they, are extremely concerned about the impact on the goldfish, but I tell them it's going to be just fine. And we add some litter and debris, and it really kind of hits home with them that, this is not a healthy lake anymore. No, I wouldn't like to swim in that. And then we, kind of segue into the conversation about, well, what can you do about it? Like, what is pollution? And, there's probably, three or four things that come right off the top of the head. And then we dig a little bit deeper because there's some things that they haven't heard of, like stormwater. And we talk about the impacts of different types of pollutants and what they can do as a family to keep the lake and river clean. And I really think that, kids remember it. I see a lot of kids throughout the school year. And so, I don't remember all of them, but oftentimes, a younger sibling will say, oh, my brother or sister remembers when you guys came in. And, so I think it really makes an impact on them.
It used to be, I used to be that people would pour stuff down those stormwater drains, like use motor oil just to get rid of it. I got a bunch of motor oil. What'll I do with it? Let's pour it down this drain here.
It magically disappears.
Is that still a factor? Are people still disposing of waste just down the
stormwater drains? We get reports of some types of activities like that. I haven't had, we do have a quote unquote pollution hotline, which is our phone number, which is 208-597-7188 that I'll get calls to occasionally where someone has observed, someone doing something like that, or perhaps they're varnishing their deck and they just dump the rest of the varnish in the river and things like that.
So when you put something down the drain, it goes to the river.
It goes to the lake or the river or Sand Creek, and Sand Creek drains to the lake. And so we don't have any treatment right now. I mean, it literally goes directly into
the storm drains.
The storm drains.
Well, what about your drain in your house? I've heard the fact that you're not supposed to put medication down because it affects eventually somewhere down the line.
Right.
We're all connected.
And I guess your household water, if you're within the city, goes to the sewage treatment plant. If you're on a septic, it gets processed by your septic tank. But if you are on a, municipal system, like things like antibiotics or other prescription medications are not processed through the three-step process that our local cities use. And so they eventually make it into the water that is discharged, for the city of Sandpoint, that's the Pendre River and city of Dover, Pendre River, Kootenay. Sorry, I'm just blanking on
Kootenay, Dover,
the Kootenay Pendre sewage treatment plant that discharges to Boyer Slough. So,
which is eventually the river,
which is the lake.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The lake.
And so, there's certain things that go down our own drains that are processed through the sewage treatment plant and some that aren't. Mm-hmm. And so the only time that, stormwater goes through a sewage treatment plant is when we have a big rain on snow event. And, some of our pipes are underground or leaky, and that stormwater kind of infiltrates those wastewater pipes or flows into the system that way. But usually it overloads our wastewater treatment plants, and we have to go to an alternative mechanism where the wastewater doesn't get treated as well either.
It goes out into the lake straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minimal treatment.
And that can trigger some repercussions from the state as well, right, if the city doesn't take care of that.
Right. Well, each municipality has to have a permit to discharge treated wastewater, and there's different sets of restrictions within that permit. And that's another, thing that Waterkeeper does is we review the permits and make sure that our municipalities are adhering to them. And we try to make sure that the permits are protective of water quality.
Mm-hmm. a big job you have going there. Is some of this information on your website, such as what not to put down the drains and what not to put down your household drains?
We do have a page or several pages on our website that are dedicated to our issues. So it's www.lpow.org, and you'll see an issues tab, and you can read about all the different projects that we're working on. I'll have to admit, I need to do some updating on the website because I'm the only employee at Lake Pondere Waterkeeper. And so I'm going in a lot of different directions at a lot of different times. But there is a lot of great information on there. You can find additional information about the stormwater monitoring program as well.
Mm-hmm. And just once again, that phone number for the Lake Pondere Waterkeeper?
208-597-7188.
Mm-hmm. And the importance of right now looking for funding for your stormwater monitoring program.
Right, because it's coming up. Actually, last year we had that big melt-off early on. And so if we could have even started earlier in late February, it would have been better because we, I think, would have captured some additional information.
Yeah. Seems logically that the earliest runoff would probably be the dirtiest.
Yes, yeah. First flush, they call it.
The first flush.
First flush. Yeah. That's a thing, for real.
Yeah.
So, right now, you know, we're almost in mid-January, which is mind-boggling. But, you know, to be able to raise the funds we need to just continue on with the two locations at the bare minimum is really important. And so, you know, if anyone wants to learn more about the program or wants to contribute to it, they can do so in a couple different ways on our website through Get Involved tab and under Donate, or, you know, happy to talk with folks one-on-one if they want to call or want to stop by the office. I'm happy to describe what goes into the program.
Do you have any events coming up just to, you know, raise money, but also raise awareness?
We are working on that, and okay. I wish I had additional details right now, but it's kind of still in the works. And so I, you know, once we have additional details, I'll be sure to let you know. Okay. And I'll have it on our website as well.
And that office is really right down on First Avenue.
Yeah. It's right across from the Starbucks complex. We got two big signs outside. You can't miss it. If you are going to stop by, I encourage you to give me a call first, since I'm in and out all the time and we don't have anybody else there right now, so I don't like people, you know, playing tag too much. But
you can use other types of volunteers for people to help with the website, for people to help in the office. So
yeah, we have a lot of different volunteer needs. Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. I'm in the process of crunching all of our data from our seasonal water quality monitoring now. I'm, you know, trying to get that up on our website so it's a public resource. But you know, we can use talent in all different areas.
Mm-hmm. So once again, contact Lake Pondere Waterkeepers, and it's Shannon at
lpow.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a pleasure having you here.
It's been wonderful to be here.
And that's Shannon Williamson, from Executive Director of Lake Pondere Waterkeepers.
Thank you.
Lake Pondere Waterkeeper.
Keeper, singular.
Singular. Mm-hmm. Because you are the waterkeeper.
Yes.
You're helping all of us. And, you know, getting involved in something this important is... like I was telling somebody else who just got involved in something, a nonprofit, you'll never regret it.
Right.
It's good work. So thank you so much for coming in, Shannon.
Thanks for having me.
And Chris?
Well, Susie, you want to take a little quick musical break while Shannon gets out of here?
Let's hear a little bit of a song, one of my favorite guitar pieces, Doc Watson, Deep River Blues. We'll be right back with a little bit of the community
calendar. What's happening around town.
Okay. And that was Doc Watson, Deep River Blues. And we're here live in the station KRFY for the morning show with Chris and Susie. And thanks for tuning in on this cold and crisp January 11th, Wednesday. And Chris, what's going on? We have about 2 minutes.
Oh, as usual, there's lots going on. You know, Martin Luther King Day, the holiday is coming up on Monday up at Schweitzer. They're going to have some events happening this weekend in celebration of that. They have a Northern Lights show that's happening Saturday with a torchlight parade. And then there's going to be extra night skiing on Sunday up at Schweitzer. And they're going to have the Deschutes Brewery there, sampling some of the Deschutes Brewery fine beer. And then something that's happening actually tomorrow night that's very cool is a full moon ski at Western Pleasure Guest Ranch. If you're a cross-country skier, they have some really fine groomed trails, and the skiing at night with the full moon is really kind of magical. That's going to be going on from about 5:30 to 8 p.m. That's out at Western Pleasure. And there's something that's happening in just a little over an hour that might be of interest. It is the screening of Being Mortal. And we talked with folks from the Bonner General Health Community Hospice last week. This is a film that was produced by PBS, and it explores patients and families that are facing terminal illness and their relationships with physicians.
And if you can't get there today, you can always go to the February 15th screening. And they're suggesting that you call to make reservations because there is lunch provided by Life Care Center. And the number to call is 265-1185. If you can't make it today, there's the February 15th screening of Being Mortal.
Yes, and that was taken from a book, actually, that's very highly acclaimed.
Well, you know what? We're out of time, Chris. I just want to say tomorrow, the Thursday edition of the KRFY Morning Show with Jim Healy and Jack Peterson, they're going to take a second look at the musicians that left us in 2016, kind of a musical retrospect. So you can tune in at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And next week, we'll have our mayor, Shelby Ronstad.
Yes, he's going to be doing a State of the City talk. And then the week following that, we're going to be talking with the two new commissioners. We hopefully have both of them. We have one committed already, and this I'm pretty sure the second one will come on as well. So city and county in sequence there.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. A little bit of civic information for you. And we're happy that you tuned in. We hope you have a beautiful day. And we're going to go out with James Taylor, The Water is Wide.
Okay, bye now.